Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Brendan Kraft. Brendan, how are you today? Midweek edition here at the show.
Oh, I'm doing just fine today, Bill. Just fine.
We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, the Buckmaster Radio Show for this Wednesday, November the 12th, 2025. Bill Buckmaster, been in the radio business forever. We've still got six weeks.
About six and a half weeks
before we wrap up the radio show the day before New Year's. That'd be December the 30th. So we've still got a lot of radio to do. You know what they said, Brendan, when I started in this business in the dark ages, you're really only as good as your last show. So I guess everybody will remember me from my last show, which will be December 30th.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to make it a big bonanza.
I know, but I've always tried to remember that. You know, you try to do a great show every day. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Sean, thank you so much, if you're listening, for your support over there at Rincon Ventures. And in the next 6 weeks, I'll be calling out by name all of the sponsors at one point or another. All right, let's welcome now the chairman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Rex Scott. Rex, Supervisor Scott, representing the district I live in, kind of the north of river area, lower foothills for me. Rex is District 1, and he is the chair of that five-member board, where four of the board members are Democrats, and there is one lone Republican, and that is Supervisor Steve Christie. First of all, Supervisor Scott, I want to thank you for your very generous and kind remarks in that wonderful piece that Jim Nintzel did at Tucson Sentinel. And there is no paywall, and any listeners who would like to kind of learn a little bit about my backstory, my life, felt like my life story, and it was really extensive, and you were quoted in the piece. Rex, thank you very much for what you said.
Bill, it was absolutely an honor and a pleasure to be part of that story. And it's hard to believe this is my next to last interview with you.
I know.
I still remember the first time I interviewed with you, which was when I was the principal at Tortolita Middle School.
Yes.
And we were talking about K-12 issues and then when I ran for the board and got elected to the board, and you're kind enough to have all five supervisors on your show on a regular basis. And I think everything that you do and have done, both on KBOI and earlier on TV, to contribute to not just our community dialogue about issues of concern, but to increase community awareness of what local government is doing, because it really is local government that has the greatest impact on our lives. And I'm very grateful to you, Bill, and I think you will doubtless be hearing those expressions of gratitude from all over the community, because you've left a true legacy of service.
And it's so bittersweet. You know, it isn't easy to walk away at really any time. Life is all about change and timing. There's a time for everything, but finding the right time is always a challenge. And I woke up a month or so ago after that wonderful trip with my fiance to Sun Valley, Idaho, where the autumn leaves were at their peak, and then we went up to Canada to Whistler and enjoyed the Canadian maple leaves again in their beautiful glory. I just came back and I woke up, and I had thought about sticking around another year, but then I thought, you know, I think I'm just going to end the whole program at the end of the year. And it just felt right. The timing felt right. But it is not an easy decision for me, or has not been an easy process. But I have tried to think it out and about what happens that first week of January. I've got a couple of very well-known clients who are going to be using my services to do some interviews for their websites. Not ready to announce those people yet, but there will be something, believe me, Rex, for me to do.
I have no doubt about that. You have probably never been and never will be the kind of person to just sit around.
Mm-mm. Never have been. Really, the only time in the entire career I was out of work was for 2 weeks. I left Las Vegas radio because a buddy of mine was taking over an all-news radio station in San Jose. And I was the morning guy, and I could call anywhere in the world. And I did. I called when the Iranian hostage situation was going on. This was 1979. I talked to the head dude that was holding our American prisoners, and we were live on the radio. And we did that for 9 months. We were just calling all over the world. And then there was a change in ownership, and they were going to automated easy listening. And, you know, we were out of a job. And I remember going home that Friday in March, it would have been 1980, and just, wow, what am I going to do? And I wound up within 2 weeks on television doing a morning show on one of the San Francisco stations, a kind of a business show. And so that was the only period in over 50 years, well, no, longer than 50, that I was out of work.
Well, that's not surprising that you've had that level of engagement and activity during all those years. And I really hope that at some point in your future, you decide to write your memoirs, because mm-hmm. just everything that I've heard in our conversations in terms of all of your personal and professional experiences, that would be a riveting book.
Well, there's talk about special collections at the University of Arizona. I think that process has already begun. So there's a lot of things going on there. So a lot of moving parts. But anyway, this back and forth between you and the mayor, who, by the way, will be here tomorrow, so I'll ask her the same question. What's the bottom line? What should our listeners know about this?
So first, let me say this. I like and respect the mayor. I have known her for a long time, dating back to when she was the Ward 1 council member and I was a principal who was representing administrators on the Metropolitan Education Commission. She and I have worked in partnership with each other ever since I came on the board. Of course, she was already the mayor. When I came onto the board, we served on the RTA board together, and we meet monthly ever since I became the chair at the beginning of this calendar year. Both of us are always going to be advocates and spokespeople for the interests and the needs of the governments that we serve and the people that we represent. And I think what you saw in her public comments and my public comments was both of us saying what we felt needed to be said with regard to these issues. But we both recognize that there is no good that comes from the county and the city as the two biggest governments in the region not being able to work with each other. And there are already numerous examples that both of us could cite of strong city-county partnership. And she and I had our monthly meeting on Monday, and we talked about the agenda for the joint meeting on the 18th. She and I have a meeting this afternoon, along with the mayors of the towns and also representatives from the tribe and the nation to talk about economic development and how we can work together to bring more jobs and business into this region. So I think what you heard from both Mayor Romero and myself was what we felt we needed to say with regard to the interests and concerns of the people that we represent. But both of us are fully committed to working together on addressing these issues. And that's what the people that we represent expect from both the city and the county.
So the issues we're talking about, focusing on growing homelessness and drug use issues, as well as lack of affordable housing. Those are kind of the big three. Is that correct?
They are. And both she and I have said to each other and also to our colleagues that we feel that there needs to be a series of joint meetings of the City Council and the Board of Supervisors to talk about these issues and how we can address them together. But we also recognize that we need to continue to work with our justice system partners, the chief of police, the sheriff, the county attorney, the city attorney, and the judges in all of the court systems, because there needs to be more consistency and collaboration in that space as well. There's also an entity known as the Tucson-Pima Collaboration to End Homelessness, which involves not just the city and the county, but also involves a significant number of nonprofits and public service agencies that work with the city and county to administer what's known as our local continuum of care. So this really is an all-hands-on-deck effort that has to be undergone, but as the City Council and the Board of Supervisors, we recognize our leadership roles, and I'm excited with the having this first joint meeting on this topic next Tuesday.
What about Project Blue? Is that on the agenda?
There is likely to be an executive session item. If you saw the memo that the county administrator sent to the board last week with regard to the latest communication from Beal, she indicated in that memo that she would be requesting the county attorney to put an executive session item on the addendum, and I'm certain that you will see that.
It's unusual for three straight board meetings to have closed-door meetings, executive sessions. Some of them have gone hours, 3.5 hours. Is there another one coming up? I think there may have been a record, three straight.
Yes, there is very likely another one coming up. And as a matter of state law, any elected body can go into executive session to talk about either legal or personnel issues. And that's what we've done in the last several executive sessions, most of which have been requested by the county attorney to brief the board on legal matters related to this development. However, also as a matter of state law, if we make any decision, those decisions have to be made in public.
Okay. And again, the joint meeting, it's open to the public, right?
Yes. And it will be held in the offices of the Pima Association of Governments, which are right around the corner from both the Board of Supervisors meeting room and the City Council's meeting room.
Okay, and that gets underway at 12:30. So
yes, sir.
Why don't we take a break right here? Stick around for segment number two, please, Chairman Scott.
You got it.
And I will talk about Mona's Danish Bakery gladly. I'll always talk about Mona's.
I'll gladly listen when you talk about Mona's.
I really do like Mona's. I mean, I was up there visiting with Steve, and he said, talk about Thanksgiving. Okay. Gladly. Thanksgiving is 2 weeks from Thursday, so this is the time now to stop by Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, or look at the website, make your order that way, or you can call in your order for pie or dinner rolls. Those will be kind of what they're looking for, and they'll have a huge... they're always busy. I think one year they had 900 orders. I went in there the day before Thanksgiving. There were like boxes stacked up to the wall. And they've replaced part of the glass. I don't know if you knew this, Supervisor, Chairman Scott, but there was an unfortunate accident where an older lady, I understand, hit the wrong gear and crashed into the window, right into the
I did not know that.
Restaurant.
That's horrible.
And it was horrible. Luckily, they were not open. It was late Saturday afternoon. So there were no patrons dining there at Mona's. But boy, anything can happen. So just always count your lucky blessings, right?
Glad nobody was hurt.
I am so glad, right? Mona'sDanishBakery.com. We'll be back with Supervisor, Chairman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Rex Scott, after this break.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Check out the project list for a new $2.67 billion regional transportation plan that Pima County voters will consider next March. The RTA Next Plan proposes improvements in the greater Tucson region to reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. It will also expand transit, bike, and pedestrian options for another 20 years. Voters will be asked to okay a half-cent countywide sales tax to continue RTA improvements. The tax rate will not increase. Learn more about the proposed plan and projects at RTANext.com.
Nice. Brendan always comes up with great bump music. I see you have, Brendan, Walk On By by the great Isaac Hayes from the Hot Buttered Soul Deluxe Remaster.
That is correct.
did we bump that? Did we play that
I believe we did
Friday?
On Friday.
Could I hear a little more?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we do it? Oh, very nice. Mellowing out here, midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Let's go back to the Lifeline presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management and speak with Pima County Supervisor's Chairman. He's a Democrat who represents the first supervisorial district. There are five districts. There are five board members. So, Chairman Scott, already the lawmakers are drawing up legislation for 2026. Is there something on your wish list?
Well, the county every year passes a legislative program, and we direct our contracted lobbyist to follow up with legislators during the session with regard to the county's priorities. And our biggest priority is always to address state cost shifts. And that's because something like 23% of the primary property tax rate is devoted to dealing with costs that the state shifts, not just to Pima County, but to the other 14 counties. And I'm very active in the State's County Supervisors Association. In fact, I'll be its president in 2027. And my colleagues around the state are tired of the legislature and governor. And this is a behavior that is engaged in by both Democratic and Republican legislators and governors, shifting costs that the state is supposed to take care of to local governments. And that's especially with regard to the costs of administering our courts and also for long-term care, long-term health care.
I kind of remember it was years ago that all that craziness began with the cost shifts. And I'm trying to figure out why that, how that all began.
Well, it's the basic reason is this. We have an amendment to the state constitution. Most states have it that requires the state to pass a balanced budget. But we also have an amendment to the state constitution that requires any revenue measure. And that doesn't just mean a tax increase. It means rolling back previously enacted tax cuts or tax credits to be approved by a supermajority of both houses of the legislature. So anytime they have a decrease in their revenues or any kind of budget crunch, the likelihood of them passing any kind of revenue measure is diminished because of that supermajority requirement. And they have to pass a balanced budget as a matter of the constitutional requirement there. So they have for decades gone to shifting some of their costs to not just county governments, but other local governments throughout the state.
Going back to the upcoming joint meeting, Supervisor Scott, the transition center will be discussed. That is something that that Mayor Romero gave kudos in her message to the public. I think that came out Friday afternoon. She said she appreciates all that Pima County is doing with it and what they are doing. They provide, well, why don't you explain? I guess there's no detox services available, though.
There are detox services available, but the transition center is something that we have had in place for the last couple of years. It's right outside the jail. And people, when they are released from jail, are able to go there and avail themselves of different services that help them to deal with the original reason why they got involved with the justice system and hopefully help them to avoid justice system involvement in the future. And all of the staff at the Transition Center, this is something that the public may not know, but all of the staff at the Transition Center are people who have lived experience in their past with justice system involvement. So they can speak to people who come through the Transition Center with a great deal of credibility and empathy. And it's had tremendous success in terms of preventing recidivism and also helping people to get their lives back on track. We've also taken efforts to help people to resolve warrants, especially warrants for failure to appear for court dates. And the board requested a plan from county administration to make the transition center 7 days a week. It currently is not, with the ultimate goal of it being 24/7. And that's been a recommendation not just from the board, but also from our justice system partners, especially our deputies and officers with the sheriff's department and the police departments.
And there is fentanyl, there's that opioid settlement funds.
Yes.
That will obviously be talked about too, won't it, at the meeting?
It will be, and local governments get a portion of the settlements that came from resolving the lawsuits against the pharmaceutical companies who were found to be responsible for getting opioids out into our communities in such huge numbers. Local governments, if I remember correctly, get around 44% of that settlement, and that goes to not just counties, but also to cities and towns. Two of the towns in Pima County decided to take their share of the funds and make use of it in the ways that their town councils determined. But we have partnered with the city and also the city of South Tucson and the town of Marana. And each of us have representatives to what's known as the Regional Opioid Settlement Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And they provide recommendations to the city councils of Tucson and South Tucson, the Board of Supervisors, and the town council of Marana.
Thank you.
How to make use of those funds.
Thanks, Rex. Talk to you next month.
Okay, Bill. You take good care.
Thanks.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
What are you staying with Isaac Hayes there, Brendan?
It's a long song.
It really is.
12 minutes.
Is that from... That's Walk On By from Hot Buttered Soul. Kind of reminds me of my brief time as a DJ. Believe it or not, at a shortwave radio station in the Bay Area. On Sunday nights, and I would get letters from Americans down in jails in Mexico and putting in requests, "Hey, Bill, will you play such and such?" They'd send me letters. I'm down in wherever, Culiacan, I'm in a jail, but I've got a shortwave radio, and I'm picking up your radio show. Jeff Silvertooth is with me in studio. You know, this is kind of this reflection time for me, Jeff. You know, everybody knows, has heard the news now that the show will end. But everything has to end, doesn't it, Jeff?
All things come to an end. We all move in a cycle. And that's just a natural part of it. But it's a good part of it is you're reaping what you've sown. You've had a good career. You've had nice productivity. And mm-hmm. you're reaping the benefits of that right now. And yeah. you're seeing that benefit. So things, what goes around comes around, as they say. But yeah, all the cycles of life, like I work in agriculture, of course, we deal with those cycles every year.
And those cycles are going on right now over at our sponsor, Green Things.
Right.
Where you can certainly pick up beautiful plants for the now late autumn and winter season. Green Things, they've been such a great sponsor. I've been calling out, and I will continue to do so over the next 6 weeks, all of our great sponsors. Jan and Jack have been so supportive, Jeff, of all of my work here, and they're anxious to have some kind of a partnership in the future, which we'll be exploring. I don't like the word, Jeff Silvertooth, retirement. I like kind of retooling, kind of re-envisioning.
It's a new chapter.
Yeah, it's a new chapter. Right. Anyway, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, greenthingsaz.com. Jeff Silvertooth has been and is our contributor on agriculture. What a career he's had. Jeff and I both came to the University of Arizona about the same time. I came in January of 88, and Jeff beat me by a few months to the University of Arizona faculty, and he's, what a great career, professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He's held so many leadership positions at the University of Arizona, but you did kind of step back from some of that, didn't you, Jeff?
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
Another change in life,
right.
Another chapter to mm-hmm. to go through. Mm-hmm. That was I came here, of course, when I think you and I first met.
From Oklahoma State?
I came from Oklahoma State,
yeah.
And came to the University of Arizona in 1987. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, it'll be, 39 years this January.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished my 39th season in the mm-hmm. field. But yeah, I've spent 15 years or so working as an extension specialist. I was a cotton specialist when I first came here, agronomist working mm-hmm. with cotton production systems.
And Pima cotton is famous the world over.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was a good gig for you.
Yeah, we had, over 500,000 acres of cotton in Arizona at the time, and mm-hmm. half of it was Pima cotton and half mm-hmm. was Zeppelin. And then I became the head of the Soil, Water, Environmental Science Department in 2000, did that for 12 years. And then I served as the Associate Dean and Director for Cooperative Extension Statewide Operation, did that for 10 years. And so four years ago, I stepped out of that role, made that change, as you're mm-hmm. describing, mm-hmm. and stepped back into, interestingly enough, a role similar to how I began. I'm back in the field, mm-hmm. literally, figuratively, mm-hmm. in agronomy, soil science, and working in extension and extension education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm finishing up my career. I realize this, I'm on the last chapter of this professional journey. But it's a good one. So it's a pleasure working with you in this capacity as well, mm-hmm. in that process.
Did we miss the deadline? When I say we, the basin states on the Colorado River, wasn't the deadline yesterday?
It was yesterday, 11 November,
and
2025.
And did anything happen?
No, they didn't turn anything in. They asked for an extension.
Oh.
What I read this morning was that the Bureau of Reclamation says, all right, yeah, you get an extension. What the Bureau set out, and that was set out by Mr. Scott Cameron, who was serving as the acting Assistant Secretary of Interior, and because they're slow on all these confirmations, Ted Cook withdrew his application or his nomination for Bureau of Reclamation Director. Mr. Cameron is now serving in that capacity as acting director of the Bureau of Reclamation. He set up a tentative schedule for the basin states and said they wanted this preliminary proposal on 11 November, which was Veterans Day yesterday, and then they want to have a more complete proposal by February. They want to have a final in the summer, and they want to begin implementation at the beginning of the water year, the 1st of October, 2026. And the basin states just missed the first deadline. They're basically being gridlocked in for a similar position for months, if not years, past several couple of years. And I know several people that are on the negotiating team on the lower basin, and I you know, also people that are close to them and close to the teams and close to the negotiating groups. And it's really kind of it's an interesting dynamic. It's almost like you see around other places, other realms of our society today, there's elements that just, they aren't going to budge, they aren't going to negotiate. And they're offering, like they're pervasive, in my view, a lot of us would say, they're unreasonable kind of demands that they're making, and they won't budge. And the federal government, the Bureau, and the Department of Interior have not really taken a strong role as they have in the past. With, you know, that was with the Biden administration. The same is true now with the Trump administration. And some folks would suggest, and kind of looks at it like it for me from the outside looking in, is that they need someone to step in and establish some structure and move things forward. If you just give me an example, Bill, in 2019, they were, basin states were trying to come to an agreement on the drought contingency plan, the DCP. And they were in a similar situation. They were in a gridlock. Brenda Berman, at that time, was the director of the Bureau of Reclamation in 2019. She stepped in and basically told them, if you don't figure it out, we'll give you something that you probably, all of you, won't like.
Right.
And that motivated them to get it going. That happened again earlier, back in 2007. So the Bureau can have a leadership role in that sense, you know, kind of like a principal in a school or a teacher in a class. And that hasn't been happening in the past, you know, 6-7 years. And it's really been a problem. And so I think, you know, right now, it'd be interesting to see where they come on this deal. Some states are claiming that if they don't get all that they want, they're going to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
And those court cases last a long time. The Arizona, California went to the court, case went to the Supreme Court in 52 and was decided in 63.
Oh, 11 years?
Yeah.
So you have the upper states, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming, versus the three lower basin states, Arizona, California, and Nevada.
And then Mexico.
And Mexico.
Right.
Has Mexico had a seat at the table?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And they've been pretty reasonable, you know. They've been pretty reasonable. They've offered to put up water for like, I think they would put up a 200, they get a 1.5 million acre foot allocation. And all this, well, the lower basin states have all said, we'll give up. Arizona has, I think, offered like 1.25 million acre feet. And lower in Mexico and Nevada's offered some water. They don't have much of an allocation, but Mexico's offered, you know, like 250,000. That's like 25% of their water, right? And so they've turned around and then put that proposal forward in the upper basin states. We don't want to give up any water. And, you know, we got some interesting disparities that just exist in the realities, the facts of things, you know. You both basins, the upper basin be above those states that you mentioned, above Lee's Ferry, and the lower basin states were all allocated 7.5 million acre feet through the Colorado River Compact back in 1922.
Mm-hmm.
That was further reinforced by that Arizona-California law case that went through the Supreme Court in 63. So in recent years, of course, we've had this drought, and they've had to give up some waters, but those are the allocated amounts to each basin.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, almost of all of the 20th century and up through this century, the upper basin's only been using like about half of their acreage or their allocation, 3.5.
Where are they putting the rest of it?
Well, that's been the deal. It's less of it. That's how we made up for what they call a structural deficit. It's going downstream and goes into the reservoirs, and that's how it helps the reservoirs fill, and then the lower basin takes out their allocation, sometimes a little bit more in the past because they hasn't been used up in the upper basin. But there still that's the case. Lower basin, those states, California, Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico, fully utilized that allocation of 2.8 million acre feet to Arizona and to the other states, fully utilized that file 7.5 million acre feet, put it to good use. The other thing that comes out of it here, and looking at it from the agricultural perspective, 70-80% of that water in the Colorado River goes to agriculture. That's a point of contention. But if you look at it this way, too, you'd say the Arizona, of all the acreage in the whole Colorado River Basin, three-fourths of the irrigated acreage is in the lower basin. It's existing now. Upper basin acreage is there, but it's less efficient. You know, you look at it, too, just in terms of reality. The lower basin, if you wanted to say how much water does it take to produce $1,000 worth of crops, for $1,000 worth of crops, the lower basin could do that at 1.2 acre feet per acre. Upper basin takes 7.6. They're very inefficient with the water they have. We have more than 40 million people depending on this water in Arizona, and a little bit more, 2-3 million more in Mexico. And Arizona, but the whole lower basin, the entire basin. You know, something has to give just in terms of the reality. And upper basin wants to keep their water allocation and starve off under this drought, particularly the lower basin states, particularly Arizona, because we're lower priority with water rights. Mm-hmm. And some of these things just don't seem to be tenable in terms of the reality that we have to deal with out here. And there's no weather coming from other sources.
It could easily go to a lawsuit.
Yeah, very easily. Matter of fact, I was told just last week that at one of the meetings last week that some folks from Arizona now that have high priority water rights are saying, look, we're sick of this back and forth. We're not getting anywhere. We're ready to go to court. Mm-hmm. Colorado's been threatening it. Ever Basin has been threatening it for several years. Mm. And so then, so you're seeing some of this breaking down, kind of the coalition. You know, I hope that doesn't happen.
This is not a good time with the drought for this to all go to court.
No. Everybody recognizes that. It's bad, but all the way around. Slow. Mm-hmm. You don't want the courts to decide, and they don't understand this water business is complex. Mm-hmm. And the basin states are much better suited to make that decision themselves. But people have to give. They have to compromise. And it doesn't seem like anybody wants to compromise on anything anymore.
And the governor here, Katie Hobbs, has been blasting the upper basin states for their extreme negotiating position.
right.
I mean, but that's kind of just a war on words. You can say pretty much anything, but unless there's action, nothing's going to change.
Well, at least she's telling the truth. Like that.
Yeah.
I'll give her credit for that. I can tell you, I can reinforce her points if anybody's wondering, you know, because we have so much stuff that gets thrown out, particularly by politicians these days. But I can tell you, she's telling the truth.
Yeah.
It is an untenable situation. She basically said what I just said, you know, in terms of there needs to be some leadership from the Bureau.
She was saying what you were saying. Yeah. Let's take a break right here. More with Jeff Silvertooth in segment number 4 right after this.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
A proposed $2.6 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 88,000 jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
What's that one, Brendan? What are you playing there?
This is by Labby Sifre. And it's called
I Got the What?
Yeah, just I Got the. That's the whole name of the song.
I got the
ellipses.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Boy, they've been a terrific supporter, Jeff Silvertooth. They've been with me, one of the groups that have been with me since pretty much we started the radio show 15 years ago. Suzanne and Duffy Kaiser, a big shout out to them from Vero Amore. They were kind of our day one sponsors. And the show wouldn't have been possible without people who stepped up and believed in what I do, Jeff. And, you know, because I don't work here for free at KVOI.
Right.
In effect, I pay the rent, and somebody had to pay that because I wasn't, you know, just doing it out of the. I mean, I love doing it, but it is nice to be compensated, of course, for one's work. So anyway, where I'm going with this is Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, is a great getaway. Jeff, I know you love New Mexico. You've been over there a lot. And their agriculture needs are different. We're talking about water. They do some chilies and hatch, and they claim to have the best, but we've got pretty good chilies, too.
Are the chilies that they have, the green chilies,
yeah.
Over 90% of the seed base comes from a seed company here in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Curry's Curry Chili and Seed Company.
Mm-hmm. Your friend Ed Curry.
Yeah, in Cochise County, right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's tied into that New Mexico chili industry based on elevation and circumstances that are conducive to that chili business. Mm-hmm. Yeah, New Mexico has some similar issues with us. They have the Rio Grande River. Mm-hmm. They have groundwater issues. They have very similar.
What do they grow over there? They don't grow cotton, do they?
They do. Southern Arizona. New Mexico is a lot like Arizona. They have most of the crop productions in the southern part of the state. They do have some in the higher elevations, you know, the upper Rio Grande valleys, and similar to Arizona, real similar. But in the southern part of the state, they have a very similar agriculture to ours. You know, have a lot of wheat production, cotton, a lot of alfalfa is grown. You know, there's dairies over there supporting cities like Albuquerque and El Paso.
But the climate's a little harsher in the winter.
It's higher elevation.
Yeah.
That's why we grow the chilies over there. So you get up to about 4,500 feet. Between that, about 5,500 feet, that's good chilly climate in the lower desert, right at this 32 degrees north latitude, cuts across southern New Mexico. Mm-hmm. So it's a good climate for that, very good climate for that.
Start your planning for a trip. It's only about a three-hour drive, nice drive over to New Mexico. Actually, we're going to be going over to New Mexico Thanksgiving week, and it's very convenient. You hit I-10, and then there'll be a turn at Lordsburg to go up the hill, up the mountain to Silver City, anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. Delightful climate up there. Cool nights, warm days. SouthwestNewMexico.org. Jeff Silvertooth is with us. One of our great contributors. That's another thing. I'm so proud of the 24 dozen or so contributors who've come on this program on a regular basis, and Jeff is one of them. He's a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. People hear me use that term extension. We probably should explain it to the listeners, Jeff.
Yeah, good. Cooperative extension is one of the three-legged elements of a land-grant institution. University of Arizona is a land-grant institution. We have one in each state, and that was developed actually from the passage of the Morrill Act in 1862.
During the Civil War?
During the Civil War, yeah.
What?
You know, yeah. So they actually, several pieces of major landmark legislation were passed by that same legislature in 1862. But the Morrill Act was passed to form these land-grant colleges. You know, really, it goes back to what we call a Jeffersonian principle based on, not Jeff Silvertooth, but Thomas Jefferson, in terms of philosophy about a democratic republic like ours. He believed, and many of his colleagues, needed a good public education system. And they, of course, believed in local education, but they also believed that they ought to have secondary education should be available to the average American. And back in those days, it was pretty much restricted to the elite. You know, he traveled to Europe and went to, you know, that's how some of the, what we call the elite universities in the United States began. But it was only for the wealthy, the upper class that could attend. Anyway, that was their vision. And it was put into place in 1862 with the passage of the Morrill Act, with a land-grant institution. We'd focus on resident instruction, research, and what they called extension. And that was take the university out into the state. And that's where I have worked for the past almost 40 years. and cooperative extension. I've done also taught classes on campus and done with research, but cooperative extension actually takes the university to the state, brings science to bear on practical problems. That's the very basic mission of the organization. Each state has a university. It's a land-grant university with that same construct. So other universities that are non-land-grant can do outreach, but that's different than having an extension. It's a committed effort in education to work with communities out in the state. And that's how I've had, as we've discussed in this program many times, a regular familiarity of working in various parts of the state. I talk about Yuma quite regularly, Southeast Arizona, all over the state. That's because we're out there. We go there and we work with people regularly, not just one shot off and then come back to campus and go on about our lives and never go back again. No, we stay. We actually have faculty in every county in the state.
What are the young people still interested in agriculture? I know there's the 4-H program still thriving,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, very much, yeah. So. You have students coming through, and we see that coming down the pipeline. A lot of them are coming from urban backgrounds these days. But, yeah, there's still people with that interest. Extension gives them a good opportunity at a university like this. A lot of them have worked with me and worked with my colleagues. They get firsthand experience in the field. And so that's kind of a nice connection to them if they have an interest in agriculture. These land-grant institutions were centered on engineering and agriculture in the 19th century. For a growing nation, those were two fundamental elements that the nation needed to build an industry and build agriculture.
Build infrastructure.
So engineering and agriculture were the cornerstones of these land-grant universities. University of Arizona is unique in the fact that it's a land-grant, but it's expanded to have this multifaceted university. Like where I come from, Oklahoma and Kansas, the more traditional land-grant structures. Texas is the same. So Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Texas A&M, the University of Nebraska.
They're not necessarily research institutions.
They are, but they're more applied. And they have good, strong, basic research programs, but they really put the focus, the emphasis on applied science, engineering, agriculture, and the robust fundamental sciences that support that. And they're good classic examples of land-grant institutions in that sense. So University of Arizona is very expansive. We have a law school, medical school, and everything in between.
What a great career you've had.
I've been very fortunate, Bill, extremely fortunate. Like they say, I'd rather be lucky than smart, you know, and so I have been, you know.
All right, Jeff, we'll do it again on our birthdays.
Sounds
on December
good.
16th. It's always fun when we do that. Jeff, great to see you. Thank you so much for everything you've done for this program.
Likewise, Bill, it's a pleasure working with you. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Professor Silvertooth and our friend Mr. Kraft, Brandon doing a great job on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.